The Accidental Entrepreneur is produced by Beinhacker Law and brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors. One of One Productions, the New Jersey-based podcast studio that produces and edits both audio and video podcasts. They sell equipment for the average podcaster and have even created a guesting kit exclusively for our listeners. North Authentic, the conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. The Healthy Place, the e-commerce site with thousands of supplements to help you live a healthier life, along with natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. And be sure to support the podcast by ordering some logo merchandise from our online store. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
It's right. That's absolutely correct. So, you know, I was a paramedic for a period of time through school. I kind of had the mentality of, you know, my dad worked tirelessly 7 days a week, worked all through vacations, you know, always hustling. And, right. You know, I kind of resented that as a kid. I'm like, you know, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to be chained behind a desk.
Right.
I'm going to go out and get out in the world. And, you know, I made my way into through sales growing up in internet businesses. I've never been in an industry that's not an internet business. You know, from right after high school, you know, the great thing about sales are a lot of them, they don't require a degree.
Right.
They don't require education. So I went in before I went to college in sales. And by the time I was halfway through my bachelor's degree, I had my own company.
Right.
You know,
no, learning sales early definitely is a skill that a lot of people should acquire.
I mean, right? It took me 10 years, you know, to finish my bachelor's and my grad school. And, you know, it was because I was running businesses during the day, multiple times.
Yeah, well, but that's okay. So, that's where you get your street experience.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, my name is Oliver Feekins. I'm the CEO of Track 5, which is a digital media company that creates job boards and technologies around the recruiting space. I also own a digital marketing agency called Trusted Search Marketing. It's my third or fourth company. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 19 years old, and I'm here to talk about entrepreneurialism.
All right. So, Oliver, thanks for coming on the show. I can't for the life of me remember how we connected, but it was probably through either a talent agency or one of these websites that I'm registered on, I'm sure, like you. Yeah. But I, you know, I'm always fascinated with people that started young and have built businesses. And, you know, you do a lot with SEO and internet marketing, which I think is, you know, huge these days that a lot of small business owners don't get. But maybe we can go back to, because I know we were just talking off the mic, you're from Lancaster, Amish country, not Amish, but Amish country. And, you know, tell me about your background, where you're from, and we'll work up to your experience in business. And I know you've run some businesses and sold some businesses. So is that a good track to run on?
Yeah, no pun intended. Great track.
Yeah, so it's right. Track 5 is the name of your company.
And the inside joke there is one of the companies that I own is called Track 5. So I'm a son of an entrepreneur. You know, so the story goes, right? And you know, I was actually born in London, England. Wow. We moved around the world, you know, South Africa, Spain, you know, Portugal, ended up in America. My dad had invested in a company here in Lancaster County. That's how we got to Lancaster. Everyone says, wow, you lived over the entire world and you settled in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So,
yeah, and by the way, people listening, it's not Lancaster.
It's Lancaster.
It's Lancaster. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, get it right.
People don't pronounce it right.
That's so, true. Yeah, he had a business that he invested in when we lived in Spain, and it was going under. Believe it or not, it was an egg farm. You know, it was not the sexiest. Yeah, and not the sexiest of business.
Like chickens or ducks or what?
No, like chicken eggs. But back, you know, 30 years ago, they were making the first organic egg in the country, which now it's like, okay, no big deal, right?
Chickens in your backyard, right?
Yeah, 30 years ago, having organics were just getting started. Anyway, these guys were going under. They weren't doing well. My dad was going to lose all his money. So basically he said, look, I will move my family over to America for 6 months and help you get back on track, help you run this business. So he did, and it succeeded, and we just never went back.
So you were in Spain. The egg farm was in Pennsylvania.
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
What was he doing for the egg farm from Spain?
So he was just an investor. So I don't know how a company from an egg farm from Lancaster, Pennsylvania makes its way to getting funding from somebody in Spain.
Is your dad Spanish?
Who was that?
Your dad Spanish or English or
no, all English. Yeah, English. But my dad had created businesses.
I can tell from your accent,
Yeah, it's lost now. It's all gone.
Right. Well, you were young, so
yeah. But yeah, so we stayed, right? So he ended up, long story short, he ended up buying another business that was deeply in debt, deeply troubled. And basically, you know, they wanted some crazy amount of money for it. He walked in and said, look, there's, you know, you owe millions of dollars.
Right.
You know, you have no product. You're going to die in like 2 months here. I will take the business for a penny.
Just take it over.
But I'll assume all the debt.
Okay. Well, that's a price, right?
Thing. Yeah. Yeah. So they said, sure, take it. So he took it, and my dad had to call every one of the creditors and say, look, I'm a new owner. Give me 1 year, stay off my back for 1 year.
Yeah.
Let me work the business, and I promise you will get paid. And they all unanimously agreed.
Yeah. Well, I find that a lot of business owners, if they did approach their creditors, as opposed to going hiding, sticking their head in the sand, people will work with you. They don't want to lose their money either. Yeah.
Because what's the alternative? You know, it's bankruptcy and they're not going to
get paid. Spend a lot of money on legal fees and don't get paid anyway.
Yeah. And that company ended up going public and making millions and millions of dollars and being a massive company. So, you know, I kind of grew up watching my father's work ethic and, you know, the risk tolerance and growing businesses and the marketing side and the sales side. Very good salesman, you know.
Right.
And I'm a big believer, big proponent of, if you're an entrepreneur or you're in business, you have to invest in sales training. You have to be able to sell.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the most critical feature you can have.
Right. And if you shy away from it, maybe entrepreneurship's not for you. You know,
you can't out product your way through sales. You can't financially optimize yourself through sales.
Yep.
You know, you can't, there's no substitute for hitting the pavement. My dad used to say something that I'll never forget. The one thing in business that I remember from my dad, he used to tell me, son, nothing happens until you sell something.
Yep. That's true.
And I remember that to this day.
Yeah. I think that's a Zig Ziglarism probably your dad learned from him.
Probably.
From years ago.
Weird.
But yeah, it's true. Nothing happens until a sale is made. Right.
It's true. And, you know, I used to go into his library in his office. He had all these sales books, you know, constant study of different sales methodologies. And I remember reading this book called, it was a telesales book back then, you know, telesales, you know.
Right.
So anyway, flash forward 20 years, I'm doing, you know, I'm learning sales and I'm teaching myself. And I'm reading a book and I end up realizing that the book that I was reading was the 20-year-old book, that the dusty book that sat on my dad's thing. So we ended up reading the same sales book in our different journeys when he was starting, when I was starting, and didn't even know it.
Right.
So some of these sales training books are timeless, you know, like the Sandler's. I mean, what's the one that said How to Win Friends and Influence People?
Yeah, Dale Carnegie maybe, or
yeah, I think so. It's classic.
You know,
it's timeless.
Of course. Look, everything gets more technologically based. Now it's internet marketing and this and that, but the basics are the same of selling and working with people and developing business. And you're right. I think it's a good point.
And selling, I mean, it's synonymous with persuasion, right? Or leading or selling,
of course.
You know, and it's not just selling your product, right? It's selling vision, you know, and what is vision? Well, you use vision to bring on customers. You use vision to bring on financing or funding. You use vision to cultivate a team to follow you, right? So leadership. I mean, everything involves sales, and marketing is persuasive in nature. So if you can't sell, you know, you end up doing really poor marketing. You know,
it's
so
true, right?
People foundation
and a lot of it's emotional. People get an attachment to you. Or look, when you and I both know, if you're raising money for a business, they're generally investing in you. You don't have a product yet. You don't have really much of a track record. They don't have confidence in you, and you're not persuasive. They're not going to put money in your business.
It's right. That's absolutely correct. So, you know, I was a paramedic for a period of time through school. I kind of had the the mentality of, you know, my dad worked tirelessly 7 days a week, worked all through vacations, you know, always hustling. And, right. You know, I kind of resented that as a kid. I'm like, you know, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to be chained behind a desk.
Right.
I'm going to go out and get out in the world. And, you know, I made my way into through sales, growing up in internet businesses. I've never been in an industry that's not an internet business. You know, from right after high school, you know, a lot of the great thing about sales are a lot of them, they don't require a degree.
Right.
They don't require education. So I went in before I went to college in sales. And by the time I was halfway through my bachelor's degree, I had my own company.
Right.
You know,
no, learning sales early definitely is a skill that a lot of people should acquire.
I mean, right? It took me 10 years, you know, to finish my bachelor's and my grad school. And, you know, it was because I was running businesses during the day. Multiple times.
But that's okay. So, that's where you get your street experience. And, you know, you're a little bit younger than me. So I graduated college in 89, law school in 92. So the internet was like just a thing in 1992. Yeah. Like it was bigger in Europe. I went to some conference in the Middle East or something, kids from all over, and they were talking about this thing called the internet. I'm like, there's no such thing. They're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. I said, listen, I live in America. We hear about everything first. That's the way it works in America. And then I get back and all these AOL discs are on everybody's porch and, you know, the
Yeah, I remember AOL. You know, my mother still uses AOL. That's embarrassing.
Well, I mean, AOL Time Warner is a conglomerate. They still have their service, right? You still
can. Yeah, they still use it.
Probably doesn't do much like it used to be. You know, it used to be a
I think my mom's their only customer.
Can you still get a disc for like 2,000 hours for free? I don't think
so.
Right?
You're
can? Can you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
no, that's funny.
I said, Mom, you know, we get, you know, so she uses like Comcast internet to log on to AOL. So I was like,
that's,
you know,
so
you don't
funny.
Need the AOL thing anymore. Right.
You don't need
She wants the email address.
You know, there's still dial up and DSL like in the Midwest. They don't have the kind of infrastructure that we do. And so I met a guy who's in that business. Like he sells DSL services and dial up service. I said, can you even buy a modem? Like you got to get them online, I guess. I said, you know, no, here everybody's just connected. He says, no, in the Midwest, it's not like that.
Wow.
That's why a lot of these legislative things are, you know, there to try and build the infrastructure.
Yeah, it's crazy to think of certain places that don't have that, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, it seems so like it shouldn't even be in America.
Could you imagine on today's internet how a dial-up service must work? How slow it was slow when we didn't have much going on in the internet.
Yeah,
it must be like take a whole day to load a page. You know,
yeah,
just
can you imagine
one line
to
at
watch
a time.
YouTube?
Yeah, right. You can't. You can't do streaming
taking
that way.
30 seconds, take an hour. Yeah.
No, you can't do that kind of stuff. So. Yeah, so I think though a lot of your points about sales and knowing sales and marketing and knowing the difference between sales and marketing are so important. You know, if anybody's looking to develop skills, whether they're in college or they're out working, definitely go and try some sort of a sales job where you can, you know, be on the street, get some doors slammed in your face, learn how to be persuasive and do it at a point where you don't have a lot to lose, you know?
Right.
You have a lot of pressure.
And Mitch, that's a good point because, you know, I don't know too many other professions where you hear no so many times, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that resilience to that no, that the ability to pick yourself up off the ground and to be able to move forward, I feel is one of the cornerstone, you know, traits of a good entrepreneur, right? How many times have people told me my ideas weren't good, or you're not going to be able to do this, or your company's too small, or these guys are way bigger than you, you're never going to be able to compete, these kind of things, right? Having a sales background or having the ability to overcome those type of objections or even just feelings, right? Like, oh, I'm not good enough, or you're right, I am too small. Like being able to kind of reposition yourself and get up off the floor and get going. I mean, that's essential. I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs give up way too early, but conversely, there's some entrepreneurs who keep on way too long, right?
Well, I mean, you know, that comes with experience, right? We fail our way to success, but I think, with the earlier you face those adversity and objections and learn to overcome that, you know, after a while, objections just are flags in the road. Oh, I'm this closer to a sale, or here's something else I got to deal with and to make your business better. But you're right. I mean, experience does come with knowing when to fold your tent and move on to the next business, you know, and sometimes that's difficult for a lot of people. Yeah.
I mean, even in the product life cycle, right? You have a maturity of products and you have a retiring of products, right? So,
right.
You know, there's always, so it's always there. So you know, to the original question, I was working for a company, an internet company, and I was in sales, but I really wanted to get into marketing. This is when I was like 19 years old. I really enjoyed marketing. I enjoyed both, but I really wanted to
expand. And what did the company do? It sold internet services?
No. So basically, we were a startup. We were a funded startup with about $2 million worth of seed. And what we were trying to do, I don't know if you remember a social networking site called Ning.
Ning? No, I don't.
Yeah, so it was right there with MySpace and Facebook, okay. Right? And when Facebook was just getting started. And essentially what Ning's concept was that instead of having one social network, they would make the social network software, if you will, or you know, architecture, and they would deploy wide. So they would basically have a social network for everything from hobbyist groups. Like if you wanted to have a law social network, you could just go in. It's kind of like creating a meetup page or something like
Got
that.
It. You could
go
yeah. in, you can create your own network within
their
create
your own network
frame.
And you could administrate it. And then they would have the ability to run their ads all the way through their entire network, which could consist of hundreds of thousands of micro social networking sites. So we were in a competitor to them. We were competing to try and to do the same thing. It's a company called LinkUp. And we were funded to try and do that. So we were creating professionalist social networks, hobbyist social networks, and really growing those. But I was really fascinated by the internet marketing side. So even though that wasn't my profession, yeah. I was kind of, you know, sitting in the marketing team, you know, kind of like during lunch and learning, I was reading avidly. And then, you know, I wanted to kind of practice what I did. So I started blogging about, for example, sales. Actually, I had a sales blog for right. a while, and I would practice all my SEO on there. I'd read everything. I would study all day, all night, YouTube videos, books, everything I could possibly get my hands on. And I would learn and I would just try it on this site. And then I found out what worked. And that was because nobody was going to hire me. I would try to get an SEO role or a digital early digital marketing role. And, you know, sales experience doesn't directly transfer over. So no. I had to kind of do it myself and get that experience, right? So, you know, and I use that as a lesson too, because I have a lot of younger people at our company, right? And they want to learn things and they want to try things out. And I think a lot of people miss the opportunity to invest in themselves outside of their professional organization, right? So they wait for their company to invest in them exclusively.
Right. Right.
And I've just never been assigned to that. If it's your craft, something you deem that you love enough to do for the rest of your life,
right.
You owe it to yourself to invest some of your personal time and finances into being the very best.
Yeah. There's no question about it. You know, be a student of your, whatever it is you're interested in, you know?
Yeah. So that guy that was one of the guys that was in the marketing department, he had a side hustle and it was basically his side hustle was he was creating landing pages for nurses, for example. And he was, every time a nurse would apply on this landing page, he would sell that information or sell that lead, if you will, to a staffing agency or a hospital or whatnot. He only had one client. It was one staffing agency in Ohio.
Got it.
And he said, look, every time you place a nurse through my internet marketing, you give me $2,000. And I said, okay. So he's been doing this for 15 months, sent them hundreds of nurses, and they haven't placed a single one. So he's going to shut it down. He was frustrated. And I said, look, I have an idea. I think I could change this business dramatically. And I think we could scale it. Let's go into business together. So we 50-50'd it up. We got in and we went in. The first thing I did is change the accountability model. So it's not, you know, I said, I think they might be placing. And I think that we can't have this based on the honesty principle. So we're going to charge a subscription fee, make it a SaaS software as a service model. And we're going to cut this client off and go find another one because they're just taking everything and they're not paying.
Well, so you figured there's no way that they're not placing anybody.
Right.
They're just not telling you about it.
They're just not telling us. So right. Like we got a test. So we cut them off. Right. So we send them an email saying, hey, we're going to, you know, you apparently haven't been successful for a year and a half.
Right. So
we're
going to
cut
right.
you off and we're going to go take it somewhere else and bring on some clients. We're also changing the model. Well, wouldn't you know, we get a phone call the next day from the owner of the company and saying, oh, there's been some misunderstanding. We forgot about you and we've actually placed 15 nurses. Here's $30,000.
Nice.
You know, so
well, they obviously wanted your leads. They wanted those to continue. Yeah.
Right. And they wanted to keep going. So we're like, great. Well, here's the model. You know, it's a couple $1,000s a month now and we're going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we ended up changing it. We ended up growing out the platform and bringing on. And that site alone ended up doing seven figures. Right. And when we used that model, and we said, wow, this works really well in nursing. Perhaps it would work really well. And well, our clients who did nursing, the hospitals were saying, do you have therapists? Do you have doctors?
Right.
So we started building out this portfolio of job sites in these different verticals. Then we went to transportation, trucking, you know, pilots.
Yeah.
And we replicated this model and this platform and expanded it obviously over time with functionality. And now we have hundreds upon hundreds of clients. We're about $7 million company, you know, and that's what we do, right? So we build these professional sites out and we grow wide. Through that came people coming to us saying, hey, your internet marketing is on point. It's absolutely incredible. How do you rank for these terms? We've been paying people for years to do this. We can't even touch you.
A lot of people don't. They say they know SEO. They don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. They haven't figured it out. They haven't spent the time learning about it, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
So we ended up creating a division called Trusted Search Marketing. It's a standalone digital marketing agency. We do a lot of digital recruitment marketing. So we work with a lot of people using the internet to hire and to recruit. But we also do your bread and butter general. You know, work with a lot of e-commerce clients, you know, everything from local businesses, law firms, things like that as well.
Right.
And it's really complemented the business because we can actually sell them on our services for example, our job boards and then, you know, bring them on to help them also do it. So one of our goals is to, we call it increased share of wallet, right? We want to be able to bring a client on and say, okay, you're paying us $1. How do we stretch that dollar to two right. or three or 10? So we can do that through adding products and upsells through our current platforms. But the agency has really helped us double, you know, at a scale that share of wallet in a way we couldn't have before. And it gives that client kind of that best of both worlds. Yes, I'm going to pay for the services that you guys are really good at, but also you're doing it for me and helping me build my internal processes as well. So it's been very complimentary. So we're really excited about it.
So the one side of the business is basically a placement agency where you're finding people, let's say for the medical profession or for the trucking industry, you mentioned pilots too. So,
yeah.
So that's one side of the business. And the other side is like people saying to you, hey, you obviously find all these people for your placement business. How do you run your SEO? Can you do that for me? So you build the whole website, or you're just really doing the SEO work after the website's in place?
Generally the latter. Well, you know,
you don't want to be in the website building business.
No, the website, nobody wants to be in the website business. It's a business that has
now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it has a massive scope creep, you know, so it's really difficult to do that profitably because you get it, you price something out, you get into the business and you know, oh, I really like that. Or can you make this do that? And you end up, you know, your time is your collateral, right? That's what you're pricing at. And, you know, you end up spending way more time than you projected. But you know the client won't pay for necessarily more time. They believe it should just magically include all these things.
Right.
So it's really difficult. And I guess you know attorneys are probably in the same boat as that, right? I mean, at some point,
yeah,
the case goes sideways or something happens or they want to do something else, the price goes up, and it's just kind of understood. I think it's more generally accepted in law than it is, you know, for example, building because I mean,
you know, look, I do document work and transactional stuff on a flat fee basis often, and I price it to give me a cushion, but sometimes we exceed that cushion and the client's yeah. just bugging you all the time, calling you for the, can we have another meeting about this? And I'm thinking, what do we have a meeting about? You know, but it's another yeah. hour of my time or whatever. So,
yeah,
you know, but yeah, I understand. It's hard, but it's good because you're paying attention to the profitability side of your business and knowing yeah. your numbers and knowing where you make money. You can't be everything to everybody just because right. you think it's cool or whatever. You know, if you're not making any money, what's the point?
Right. So. And sometimes it's a complementary, you know, asset, right? So, you know, sometimes we can't take on a client unless they redo their website. I spoke to a client yesterday who was having an e-commerce site issue and she was using a GoDaddy e-commerce product, which we're not a big fan of. We couldn't work with her unless she replatforms the site onto at least something like Shopify or Evolution or something like that, or Magento, because we wouldn't be able to be successful with what we're doing. So she would pay us a lot of money. And at the end of the agreement, she would be disappointed.
Right.
So for us,
you partner with other developers. So you would send her, listen, here's the people that we work with. Let them develop your site. We'll work with them in the SEO. Do you do it that way?
So generally, if we're going to do a large marketing campaign, we'll do the build out of the website as well. So we have a bunch of programmers here and developers here, really talented engineers here. So we will do it only if it comes to the internet marketing side of it. Because for us, it allows us to pad what we'll probably, we'll lose money on the website to make money on the internet marketing. Right,
right, I understand. But you're not going to do one without the other.
Right. But we won't just do a website by itself because it's generally just not very profitable work. And it's very subjective. Like I can show you, you know, rankings and I can show you conversions and I can show you social engagement. And those are numerics that are hard to argue with. But when we talk about a website development, you know, we're talking about, you know, subjective things, colors, images, how it looks and feels.
Right.
And everyone's got an opinion. So it just snowballs into this massive amount of
time. Yeah, you get into all the branding side of it and everything like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But no, so we primarily, and one thing I've learned too, this is interesting. So this is my second digital marketing agency. I had a, you know, another big seven-figure agency that I started about 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
Number of accolades. It still exists. Very, very successful agency. One of the 1% Google partners, you know, all that kind of stuff. Right. And we did everything for, kind of like you mentioned before, everything to everybody, right?
Right.
And what we found out, what I found out is that it really broke our processes. And I was so inclined to want to do everything for everybody because I wanted to be that business that would be, hey, whatever you need, we'll do it. You want us to cook you breakfast, right. We'll do it.
Come in,
you
know, don't leave. Right.
And we'll bill you for it. You know what I mean? Like whatever. But it was really hard to processize that. It was really hard to kind of, you know, train on that and to scale that out. So this agency, we're doing it a little different. We're trying to build processes that allow us to train, grow, make sure the quality is there. And if something's not in that process, as much as I would love to take the money,
right.
If it's not a good fit, we're not going to bring them in.
Right.
Because it really stopped us from being able to grow past a certain point in my previous agency because of the lack of being able to process, you know, or, you know, policy what we're doing. So
right.
That's one thing I've had to really learn is to say no to bad work, if you will, to say yes to good work.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people, especially business owners, miss that in the early days, especially, right? They want to be everything to everybody. They don't want to pass anything up. I don't know who's going to lead to what. What am I going to do? They don't pay attention to their profitability. Their customer service and accountability then suffers. The client has a bad experience, and then it all snowballs, and now it's having a negative impact. You think you're keeping business to keep revenue going, but at the end of the day, you're really not building quality service for the right kind of customers that you want to do business with. And I think it backfires.
Yeah, it does. And not just that, but like, you know, there's a difference between kind of your startup grind mentality of I'll do anything I need to do to get to an MVP, or I'll do everything right. I need to do to get to profitability. And that's okay. Right. But at some point when your product or your business matures, you have to make that switch into right. long-term growth, scalability, you know, and that's when, and slowing down and focusing. Right. And that's where it can be a little tricky. And even for me, like one of my biggest, you know, hardest parts was going from, I love the startup grind. I love the pressure. I love the adrenaline rush behind the startup side of businesses.
Right.
And I love the chaos, like the organized chaos, because it really is a race against the runway or race against time.
It is kind of, yeah. A lot of people, right? You know, charged by that.
Right. But for me, I loved it so much that I continued it multiple years into the company when we didn't need to, when we were right. profitable, we were making money. And it made it more difficult for people who were working with me because it was kind of like organized chaos a little bit. So I had to learn to slow down, take two steps back to take three steps forward in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know that a lot of founders, startups don't take this, they don't figure that out and they can't make the transition. It's a different skill set. Yeah. When you have a company that's profitable with employees and you got systems, you got to run this and do that and pay attention to profitability and know your numbers and all, as opposed to when you're right, you're getting started. And look, you've seen large corporations throw out their CEO because the guy was the entrepreneur's founder. Maybe in some cases he came back, yeah. but he wasn't able to be the executive to do the executive things that you need to take the company to the next, you know, level. And that's definitely a hard one, I think, for the average entrepreneur when he gets that far, you know,
it takes a lot of like inside reflection.
Yeah.
Right. And it takes a lot of being honest with yourself and looking
and humble. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because the humbleness did not get you to where you are. Right. If you got to have a lot of balls, you got to have a lot of perseverance. You got to have a hard shell, right. You got to be willing to take no. If you're raising money, you might have to visit 300 people before you get somebody to say, yes, I don't know. So you have to have a resilience and a thick skin. That is not what you need to then say, okay, maybe I'm not capable of doing this myself. I need other people to come in around me and support me or whatever. It's a hard shift or pivot to make, you know?
I really feel like, and maybe you would agree with me here, I really feel like there's two different, I want to say jobs or roles, but there's the difference between business building and managing a business.
No question about it. And some people like you make the transition and recognize, okay, I got to change my skill set. I got to learn this. But a lot of people don't. Yeah. And they don't recognize it. And look, that's when it's really good. Why I recommend to people to, you know, find a good coach, to find a good mentor, to maybe create a small advisory board for your business and use people that have other expertise and aren't so in the day-to-day of your business, because that's how you get lost. You'll get lost in the forest of your business. Yeah.
I put off a coach for about 10 years. And for me, it was an internal like sign of weakness. Like, oh, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, see, there you go, right? And you probably should have done it 5 years before, 10 years before that, right?
Yeah. Well, we just did one. So, you know, what we did is we did this retrospective assessment through a large consulting company where basically, you know, what I'm trying to do is think of like how, you know, great, you know, we're, you know, multiple millions of dollars. How can I get to $20 million or $30 million? How can we get to this next level, right?
By the way, a new skill set. Mm-hmm. It's a different skill set now to run a $20 million mm-hmm. business versus the $1 or $2 million.
And a different perspective, you know?
Very much so.
I said, you know, I need to get an honest opinion of where we're at. So we called a really large consulting, you know, one of those big consulting companies. They came in and did a retrospective, and it was the most interesting thing. They interviewed everybody for over an hour, everybody in the company. They did surveys. They basically spent tons of time. And then what they do, if any of you guys listening to the podcast get a chance to do this, it's a really interesting. So, you know, when you're the founder of a company, it's your baby. It's your, you know, if someone says anything about it, if you feel it, right, you know. So I had to sit through, you know, it's like a firing squad of like 8 different, you know, MBAs from this company and with a, you know, putting together this 30-40 page report of the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
Right. And I had to stop myself because the good I loved.
You know, yeah, but the bad, the ugly is 2/3 of the report. So yeah, man, you got to take it.
And I would argue every point with them. You know, right. So once we got down to like I started, you know, well, this person doesn't understand.
Right. You had excuse. I mean, but that's typical. That's your nature. It's human. That's being a human being. And it's hard to stop yourself. You need a voice in your head to say, Oliver, shut up. Listen.
Yeah, right? I had to do it. You know, you're like, so, you know, I took the report home and I was looking at it. And, you know, some of the things were, you know, I'm looking at them. They were like, okay, this person has no idea what they're talking about. But for me, it was where did they get this from? What was the feeling that made them think this? You know what I mean? So
here's a word from our sponsors. Looking to get into podcasting? Maybe to market your business for your own enjoyment or because you have a message you want to get out there. One of One Productions is a New Jersey-based studio just over the George Washington Bridge that caters to the booming business of podcasting. They offer a comfortable atmosphere using the latest technology available to record your podcast. And they are a full-service media company offering both audio and video production services, creating both audio and video podcasts as well as video shorts for business and personal use. Professional audio equipment packages are available through their website for all budgets, and be sure to check out their podcast guesting kit created specially for our listeners. Care for your health, care for the planet, and look flippin' great doing it. North Authentic is a conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. Their pro stylists curate only the most fabulous non-toxic hair products with better-for-you shampoos, serums, masks, and more that actually give you gorgeous hair without hurting your health or the planet. Hey, you've only got one life, one planet, and one glorious mane. Might as well treat them all as best you can, right? Try a 100% clean hair care routine prescribed just for you using their link in the show notes. If you don't see a big, beautiful difference in how your hair looks and feels, you can tell them they're crazy. Do you battle chronic pain, stress, anxiety, or depression? Well, if you take any supplements or you're interested in natural alternatives, you need to know about findyourhealthyplace.com. Find Your Healthy Place has thousands of supplements to help you live a better quality of life, as well as natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. Need guidance? Use their live chat feature and talk to a wellness consultant right on their website. And be sure to use our coupon code TAEPODCAST for all your purchases to get the best prices at findyourhealthyplace.com. Follow their links in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
I ended up taking this massive deck and basically trying to truncate it into about a dozen or less principles, right? So it could be a lack of focus, right? It could be the, you know, being having a clear voice, having everybody understand what our vision is. It could be things like, you know, not knowing enough about the personal lives of our employees and wanting a deeper connection with me personally, you know, all these type of things that have came up, right? And
sure.
Basically, you know, I've been working through this punch list and trying to create changes in my behavior to accommodate this. And it's really weird. I got a 360 of myself the other day. I do 360s and I take one from everyone in the company. I want one. So And it was interesting that people made a comment, made multiple comments that since we've engaged in this training, that they've seen improvements in some of my less desirable characteristics, right? My being, maybe being impatient in meetings, or, you know, over talking people if I don't agree with them, or things like that when I get, you know, passionate.
Right, right, right. Well, but, you know, I think awareness and consciousness of what you're doing and how you're doing it and how it's affecting other people is like 90% of the formula.
Yeah.
And once you're aware of it, I mean, unless you're a total dick, but for the most part, if you care about your employees and your company and the success of everybody, and you're aware of it, you're like, I didn't know I did. You know, you see yourself in a photograph, you're like, why didn't anybody tell me I stand like that? Or look at like this with people. And awareness is really important.
And it's interesting because I've gotten 360 reviews since I started the company. They've always been open door, you know, guys, give me feedback. And nobody would give me feedback, right? Even if it was anonymous.
They're afraid your response is going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So once I did this big retrospective and it was kind of all on the table, it opened the floodgates for people to be honest, right? Not just with me, but with each other. Right.
Because they felt safe doing it, right?
Yeah. It's now part of our culture where we can, you know, address issues with other people respectfully and work towards a solution instead of letting them fester and not changing. So it's been really remarkable. So to your point, a good coach, you know, I think, and I wouldn't look at it as you need a coach because you're weak or underperforming or anything like that. I think that's the initial.
The best people have coaches.
Yeah.
The highest performers have coaches and advisors and people that they turn to, because you can't do it. Michael Jordan didn't win the NBA championship 6 times on his own.
Yeah.
He had a lot to do with it, but he also had a lot. He does his own coach, right. And, you know.
And I would say, think of it more as an accountability partner, right?
Yeah.
So, and someone to bounce the ideas off of. You know, I find it hard to bounce ideas off of staff here because they're a little bit biased, right? They work here.
They're in the forest with you, right?
They're not going to sit there and tell you over to your face that it's a bad idea, but a coach will.
Right.
You know,
absolutely. So, I think you mentioned the word culture before. I think that's the piece that becomes more of an issue and more of an important element as you grow your company, right? Because then the culture in which your employees live and work in, do they buy into your vision and do they understand what you want to do? Do they agree with it? And all that kind of stuff becomes so much more important as you grow the company and you have a larger employee base and everybody's, you know, different jobs of they get separated and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people miss that.
Yeah, it's just interesting. You know, culture is something that it's been near and dear to our heart. And everybody says that, right? Every entrepreneur is like, oh yeah, we have a great culture.
Right.
We make it a priority. We put money, we budget culture. You know, we have money that goes towards it. We have people that are in charge of it. We have a dedicated effort from everyone because we made a comment to everybody. Look, you know, we want this to be organic. It's going to be a culture of your choosing. But if none of you participate in the culture and none of you work to the culture is going to be what it's going to be, right?
If
none of you, if you guys are all dicks to each other, that's going to be the culture. Yeah.
I mean,
but if you guys care about each other and you guys are respectful and we have the culture where we're a team together, if all of you put in some effort with us and we'll help by doing things on our end to provide opportunities for that,
then
we can really have a winning culture. And, you know, our culture is second to none. You know, it really is awesome. People come here and they're amazed. It's just, we have this kind of thing. We still have that startup mentality. We still feel, even though we're like 30 people, we still kind of act like we're 8 or 4, you know, where we're all helping each other get things done. And I hope we never lose it. It's a real asset.
I think that's a testament to, you know, the fact that you recognize that and you cherish it and you think it's important, and not just important, like, I think we have a great culture. You don't take it that way. You want to make sure you do. And it's important because I know some people that do some recruiting and they work on the branding of the culture because it does attract. So if you have the right culture, it does attract the right people to not only join your organization, but stay with your organization. A lot of companies definitely miss that.
Yeah. And now it's more important than ever. It's way more important.
Much more important than it ever was. I know.
It's, you know, post COVID, everyone's recruiting from everywhere now. Right.
Yep.
So, you know, we lost a couple of people during COVID who, you know, got to go working from home anyway. Right. So now, you know, San Fran, Silicon Valley startups are calling on their door and saying, hey, we'll pay you San Fran money instead of Lancaster, Pennsylvania money.
Yeah, you can be living in Oregon and they can hire you from North Carolina.
Yeah.
More
you competitive. Could be, you know, you could be in rural Kentucky and get paid like a Silicon Valley engineer, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So if and for us, that's not sustainable for any company to match that, right? I mean, you have to be in those markets and those type of businesses to be able to do that. You have to pay your market value.
Right.
And the market value, geography just completely left that market value now, right? So what do we have left? Culture.
Yeah.
So it became important.
Yeah. And people are definitely reevaluating things with what they've been through and they've seen their friends go through and relatives lost and things like that. And they're reevaluating what's important. You know, they might not take the highest pay if they like what they do and they feel good about going to work and the work cares about them. And look, there's a lot of people in large law firms that I know that packed it in and said, listen, I've been doing this for 30 years. I have a clientele. I know there's no non-competes in law, so you can take your clients with you. I don't need to do it. What the hell do I need to do this for? Working 60, 70 hours a week, commuting, not seeing my family.
Right.
It's not worth it to me. And they pack it in. They're starting their own practices, smaller practices outside the cities. It's a big shift in a lot of industries.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Mitch, because I feel like there's a lot of micro entrepreneurs starting in the last couple of years. Like
tons.
You know,
yeah.
Think of, and I say micro entrepreneurs, but think of like freelancers, for example, in the marketing
consultants,
side, right?
Right.
It's the exact same thing. How many people have been programmers or designers or even, you know, social media.
They're
people
all freelancers now. Yeah.
They're all going freelance because they realize that I only need to make, you know, I'm making whatever, $60,000 at this job. I could do that with a few clients.
Right.
You know, and I'll just go get a few clients. I'll take them. Same thing. I'll take them with me, even if they have non-competes. And, you know, they'll go to work. But
and you don't have to be where the company is. You can be working for three companies around the world. A lot of these guys do. And yeah, I mean, the world has definitely shifted. It's gone from side hustle to your primary, you know, occupation. And you know, we're seeing a lot of that shift now very fast, very fast.
Yeah, and merge that with the kind of the talent shortage or the worker shortage, if you will. It's really created a recipe for disaster for, I think, any business trying to hire or grow in this climate. It's been very difficult. So, culture, super important.
Absolutely. Well, I think in certain industries like technology, the shift of the population, people moving around, doesn't affect you as much as like the local diner that needs people to come in and wash dishes. And these people left because New Jersey was so expensive to live in.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm not making any money. I got to leave. And now they've left and they're not coming back. And they're all, you know, and that we're short on a lot of labor.
Yeah. You know, I have two sisters that live in Midtown. Right. And I always think about that. How do these people, you know, that are, you know, working the back of restaurants, you know, for whatever, you know, $12, $15 an hour, whatever. How do they survive? Because, you know, they must have one hell of a commute into the city or, you know, they must live in, you know, I mean,
poor neighborhoods,
so expensive.
Yeah. Look, either city's great if you're rich and if you're poor, you're stuck there and you can't get out. You gotta live in really poor neighborhoods and, you know, the middle class, you just get eaten alive with costs. Yeah. That's why a lot of people move out to the suburbs.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. But I'm glad to hear. So when did you start the company? When, what year was that when you,
oh man, I think it was 2011. No, 2007.
So it's been a good, you're pushing up on 13, 14 years now.
Yeah. Yeah. This one. Yeah. For Track 5, which is our recruitment platform company.
Right. That was how it started.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what's interesting, right, is like I started that company and when, you know, it was actually right, you know, what happened after 2007?
Yeah, everything crashed.
Everything crashed. So in 2008, I'm, you know, I lose 30% of my business like in one day.
Yeah.
And I'm scared, right? I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I barely got this thing, you know, this company's held together with, you know, chewing gum and barbed wire. So I, you know, again, you know, I've always had people say, wow, you're, you know, it's always been a skill-based thing. Wow, your internet marketing is really good. Would you consult? Would you help us? So at that point in time, I actually opened up another company. I was like, I'm going to work on this company, but I'm going to reduce the salary burden. I'm going to consult for 3 or 4, you know, SEO clients over here, get them going. Well, that turned to like 5 to 10. And next thing you know, I'm sitting there like, oh no, I've accidentally created another company. So, you know, we're doing this. And then, you know, it's funny. I went out to lunch with a friend of mine who had a web design agency. Huh. He, you know, and he wanted to get into internet marketing. And we weren't doing any web design and development at that point. I wanted to get into that. So we ended up merging the two little companies together and creating like a springboard. And we took that into what was called Web Talent, which is the company that I started with him. He merged into my company. And then we ended up growing it like wildfire over the next 3 years. I mean, we were some of the largest clients in the country. That we were a boutique agency, really, really good. You know, but, you know, meantime, the Track 5 side is also, you know, recovering. And during that time where I'm growing that web talent, right, I'm growing Track 5, we have a partner in the company, a majority partner of that, of Track. We had taken on a partner in Track 5. Okay. So now there's three of us as a majority who is supposed to be the funder and the wisdom and the, you know, successful entrepreneur. And we were both young. I got, you know, we're 20 something years old, you know, like 21 right. years old. And the guy,
but you're still the actives in the business. He wasn't as active.
No. Well, he sold it as being active, but, you know, he basically said, look, I'm going to take 53-54%. You guys are going to split the remaining half. And we said, well, why are you taking so much? And, you know, we're doing all the work. And he said, well, because A, I'm the money guy. I have all the risk. You guys don't have any risk or minimal risk.
Right.
And B, I'm the one out of the two of you that started a company before. And he'd started a successful internet company as well. So we were both young. We were like, oh, okay. See, that makes sense. Sure. So right. we did it. And, you know, we had this thing where, you know, the guy never showed up and never put any single penny in, locked down the financials.
He never put money into the business?
Never put money in. He went and got 5 credit cards in the company's name and maxed them out. Ugh. And we ended up having this thing where, like,
I hear so many stories like that.
Wouldn't let us see the books. Like, it was QuickBooks Online. He would never let us
see what
it.
He was doing.
And we would say, like, I would say, man, can I see real quick? I want to know how the company's doing. I'm trying to run it, because I was essentially running that company, and or I was running the company. And he would say, what, you don't trust me?
Yeah, well, see, there's a red flag right there. Anytime anybody
like,
says,
no, I'm sorry.
You think I'm not good for that? You don't trust
exactly.
me? You're like, yeah, I don't think you are. Not with that comment.
And this, you know, this guy's
but
an
you're
older
young,
guy,
right?
You
yeah.
know, and he's boisterous. I'm a 21-year-old kid. I just got out of high school.
Right.
So I would cower down immediately. I'm scared out of my mind.
Right.
And
he's taking advantage of that. He knows.
Yeah. Well, one day the bookkeeper comes into the office and says, guys, I'm quitting. I'm like, oh no, what's going on? I can't talk about it. It's just not something I can be involved in. And we were so confused.
Right.
And like, and then she says, well, before I go, I just have to do one more thing. Can I use your laptop? I said, yeah. So she goes in to the laptop. She signs into QuickBooks Online. Oh, she doesn't show me, but she did. And then she left. So I'm
just
back
left it on.
Just left it on right in front
right.
of me. So I said,
oh
my God, holy crap.
Right.
I told the other guy who's a partner with me, I'm like, guy, load up the printer. I'm like, you know, so I'm like, we're printing out the entire ledger for like the last year and a half. We took it home. We took half, he gave half to him, half to me. Went home 2 hours later, we're on the phone and we're sick to our stomach.
Yeah.
Right. Flat screen TVs for, you know, every room in his house, you know,
oh,
going out to dinner
God.
Every day, you know, and we were that was 2008. So we were having trouble, you know, paying ourselves. So
yeah.
He would say things like, guys, we don't have money for all of us. So I will sacrifice myself for both of you. You guys have, you know, you guys have families, you guys get paid. And we say, no, we'll just lower it all and just split it. And he said, no, guys, you know, I'm going to do this for you. I want to do this for you. And we found out that not, and then the next month he would come back and say, hey guys, we have a little bit more money. So I'm going to take out what I owed last month. And then this month, where it turns out he wasn't doing that at all. He was still paying himself and then doubling it the next month. Right. And he was taking the cash out and then putting everything else on credit cards. So by the time we kind of saw this, we found out that we had, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in credit card debt for a company that was doing $300,000 a year at that time.
Oh, God.
And, you know, we had no cash in the bank. In 2008, when everything was coming down, it was the worst combination of things, right? So,
right.
you know, basically, the other guy that was in a company with had a nervous breakdown over it, legitimately terrified. He had anxiety. He was just not dealing well with it. He didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. I had no money. So I ended up going to an attorney and I'm trying to figure this out. It's obviously a breach of fiduciary responsibility for
might
start.
Be criminal. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we ended up having to, we basically confronted it. I confronted him and, you know, his response was, well, I have another business. So if this is how it's going to go. I'll scuttle the company.
Yeah.
You know, if it's only three, you know, it doesn't matter to me.
Right.
And then we're like, whoa. So we ended up kind of like, you know, and then he wanted some crazy number. Like I want $1 million to buy out my 50% of a company that's $500,000 in debt and $300,000
right.
in revenue.
Yeah,
I'm like, luck. That doesn't make sense, man. So
right. Anyway,
we had to go through attorneys back and forth. It got really messy. And, you know, for me, I'm 21 years old. I just got married. I just bought my first house. And this has all happened to me. I'm loading up with debt.
Yeah.
And I'm up. I'm not sleeping.
Of course.
I'm
stressed
out to the gills.
Yeah.
And I had to go through it. And, but at the end of the day, we had to make a decision to my other partner. I said, do we go through this and take the risk that we could rebuild this, pay off all this debt, survive 2008, get this guy out and grow this company? Or do we just let this thing die, you know, cut it
off, start something new.
And we sat down and said, you know, we've had so much So we have to really do a self inventory. Do we have the balls to do this? Do we have the trust in ourselves to do this?
Yeah.
And the answer was yes. So we did. We overpaid like an insane person on the valuation, you know, just to get this out and start fresh again. And everyone thought we were nuts. And then in 2 years later, you know, what we were able, basically we just worked our asses off for so long and, you know, without pay for, you know, 7 days a week. But in 2 years, we were able to pay off all the debt and grow that company to over $1 million.
Did you have to buy him out, the other guy?
Yeah.
Were you forced to buy him out for some amount?
Yeah, to buy him out. Yeah.
What a shame.
And the most ridiculous, valuation you would ever imagine. It's, but for us, it was just like, it's just money. So I had to take an inventory of where I think that business could be in 5 years, what those numbers could be if this guy was out and how it would come into play. And I knew that if I worked tirelessly and me and my other partner worked together, within five years, we could make this thing massive. And if we had to start again, I don't know if we'd be able to get that momentum back. So we just took it as an elephant on the back, so to speak, financially, and worked really hard to go through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it's one of the things in business when you're young, you trust people and there's predators out there that come and take it. I can't tell you how many stories I've heard like that with guests on the podcast and other people that I've met where they met somebody who was older, who seemingly had a lot of advice for them and took them under their wing, was said they were putting money in the business, never did, and just raped and pillaged their business. And the same thing. They're like, well, if you want to feel that way, I'll just blow up the business. I've done it before. And there's people out there that learn how to do that and just, you know, rape and pillage these businesses. And it's just not good. And luckily you were young enough and had the balls, the stick-to-itiveness, the gumption to turn it around. Yeah. A lot of people can't.
And it was funny, right? So right now I'm also a professor. I'm adjunct. I teach entrepreneurship, and we had a business ethics class that I was teaching. And everyone's assignment was to bring in an example. And I used this example. I went through it in more detail. And the class was shocked. At the end of the class, they're speechless. And one kid raises their hand. They say, you know, Mr. Feakins, is this guy in jail?
Yeah, that's what they want to think. It sounds like it criminal.
A happy ending, right? Like a movie ending. I said, no, we paid him a ton of money. And
he kind of won.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you won now, but he got his pound of flesh.
Yeah, and they said, but he did all that stuff, and I'm like, guys, in business, I should rephrase that. It's not right or wrong. That's the issue. It's that it's the eye on the bigger picture, right? It's where you're going to end up, not what's happening today.
Yeah,
and so that's a hard pill to swallow. Like I had to swallow that pill, right, in order to get to where I am today.
Right.
And that's where my focus was.
Yeah. And you know what? You made a good choice because a lot of people, I don't litigate. I think I told you that I'm a transactional attorney. I draft documents. I do negotiate things, but it is always usually a better decision to avoid the fight, to maybe pay them off, to not spend all these monies on legal fees, because forget about the money you're going to spend and the fact that it's probably going to trash your business anyway, but the physical stress that it will have on you and your partner and your family and your life fighting this jerk off, just get him out of your life and move on and use all that energy to rebuild what you did. And you did that. A lot of people don't. They just get lost in the funnel, you know?
Yeah. And at 21 years old, 22 years old at that point, you know, going up against someone's over twice my age and, you know, obviously economically different and things like that, you know, it really kind of gave me that confidence to kind of move forward. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. It was in my first year of growing out of business during 2008 recession.
Right.
And I learned a lot.
I'm sure the next time somebody came along, you were like a different person.
Yeah, it wisened me up a little bit. You know what I mean? It's a lesson that I wouldn't trade for the world because I don't know how I would have received that lesson any other way, you know?
Yeah. And you might not be where you are now.
I would agree. I think so, you know, my earlier point, you know, entrepreneurs give up too easy sometimes, right? It would have been easy for me to throw in the towel, go get a job. It would have been easy for me to try to start another company and succeed. But, you know, I stuck it out, stuck with it. And you know, you really have to take a check in yourself, right? To know what, you know, what you can do, what you can't, and what you believe in yourself to be able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So since we're on this topic of lessons learned and things like that, let's say you are mentoring a young entrepreneur, guy's starting his company. what kind of advice do you give him when he, you know, when he gets started in general? Forget about whether it's an industry, you know, I don't care what the industry is, just, you know, things like that.
So I would break it up into a couple of different points, right? So, have you seen that show? Is it Marcus Lemon or whatever his name is?
The Prophet.
MSNBC. The Prophet. Yeah.
Yeah. Great show.
So I like his, you know, it's kind of similar to mine, but he focuses on, was it people, processes?
People, process, and product.
And product. Yeah. Right. People, process, and product.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the most simple way to explain the kind of core fundamentals of starting a business, right? So you got to have the right people, and that includes yourself, the right product, right? And you know, but also, you know, I would say, you know, when people are starting a new business, you know, you have to have the idea first, right? And that's fine, but you have to be able to execute it, right? I've seen so many people spend so much time on the nitty gritties of the product or everything surrounding what they're going to sell or their service.
Phone with China overnight. They're having this stuff. Then they end up with a garage full of 10,000 units and they don't know what the hell to do with them.
They don't have any idea of marketing. They don't know how they're going to sell it. They don't have any idea of like what the financials are going to look like. They don't know where the business is going to go. And I think tunnel visioning is huge, right? So, you know, it's really easy to silo into specific parts of the business that you feel comfortable with. For people that I know, I've seen them create beautiful processes, beautiful financial projections, but have a lousy product and no way to sell it. So I think it's really important that you take an inventory on the entire, you know, entrepreneur ecosystem that you're going to need to grow your business and find out what you're missing. For example, my Achilles heel is finances.
Right. Yeah, it's common with all of us. We're very right brained. We're very creative, especially in your business. You like to create. But knowing your numbers, not knowing your numbers, you can, well, it almost sunk you before when you had somebody else handling the finance.
Exactly. So, I had to spend time learning that and I'm still never going to be good at it. But for me, at a very early on age, I always outsourced my bookkeeping. I always outsourced that because
bring the professionals
my time
in.
Is better spent on doing other things rather than growing the business. So I think you just got to be really careful with what you're spending your time on and making sure you're covering the entire thing, right? There's no point in, you know, decorating the living room when the building's on fire, right? You have to
That's a good analogy
of what's going on.
I think maybe there's a fourth P missing, as you mentioned, and that's profitability, knowing your numbers and your finances. Yeah. That's probably the fourth thing. I always say to people, you know, put your ideas down on paper, write a business plan, but it doesn't have to be. It could be just those four areas. It could be a one-page thing, just something to work with as you're going forward with your business, as opposed to just, like you said, winging it and calling China, making a product, getting prototypes. You're all excited and then you're not going anywhere.
And that works for the forecasting part of it too. I've seen people, as well as your attention, but I've seen people dump 90% of their money into the product and have nothing left when it comes here.
Yeah. You know how many people call me, Oliver, and said, Mitch, I think I have to shut my business down. I'm like, didn't you start like 4 months ago, 6 months ago? Yeah, but we didn't anticipate that this cost and that cost, because they don't even have a business plan.
Yeah. It's funny. I have a friend that works for, just worked for a trades company, you know, like a roofing or whatever kind of company. Right.
Yeah.
He wanted to go into his own business doing, you know, general contracting labor, make his own little contracting company.
Okay.
And he was asking advice. And I said, you know, here's what you need to do. You need to literally bring your lifestyle down and you need to work really hard at the company you're at to save a nest egg. So you have a bounce to move forward. And he's like, well, you know, why can't I just go? You know, get yourself
with
prepared.
No cushion, nothing.
That's no cushion.
Dangerous.
He's like, well, I don't need that much to get started. You know, it's just, I already have the tools. And I'm like, yeah, but you're going to need to sell the business. You're going to need to build a website. You're going to need to market. You need insurance. You're going to need all these things, your cost. Nice. And you're going to need, you know, it's going to take longer than you think it's going to happen. And you need money to survive.
Yeah.
Didn't listen, quit the next week. But now he's in the position where I'm running low on money and I haven't even got the website up. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'm like, you have to make sure you're prepared. You know, when I first launched Track 5, right, before I fully launched it, what I was doing is I negotiated with my current employer, said, hey, I want to augment my schedule. I want to work 7 to 3. And what I would do is I'd work, 7 to 3, rush home by like 3:15, 3:30, and I would sell. Because at this point, I would work overnight with India building the first prototype of my business. I outsourced it overseas, which means I could do it. So I was working till 1 a.m. building this website with the Indians or whatnot, right?
Right.
So once it was done and I had to go get clients, I would come home at 3:30 and I would call East Coast. And then once they hit 5 o'clock, I'd move over to Central, then Mountain Time Zone, then Pacific. I'd be calling till 9 o'clock at night, selling this thing every night. And then back in the office at 7:30, selling for the company I worked for. And I was doing that for about 6 months before I was able to move on. Right. And so, I was doing it ethically. When I was 7 to 3, I was working.
You focus on the business that's paying you to do work.
Actually, working two full-time jobs. But, right. You know, I was able to get the company to an MVP and where it had profitability and money in the bank before I made that jump. If I wouldn't have been able to do that, I personally wouldn't have been able to probably survive enough financially to get it where it is today or even to continue it. So you got to have kind of a smart way of doing this. And it takes patience and a lot of strategic planning.
It does, definitely. I think the most successful entrepreneurs that I know and that I've met, well, first of all, they're very driven. You know, you got to be tireless, but they're also planners, not to the point where they paralyze themselves.
Yeah.
But they're just strategic about what they do. They think it out. They write it out. They think about it and then they do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, people that can plan and write and they're waiting and this got to be perfect.
Yeah.
They can't wait for all the lights to turn to green before you head towards town. You know, this is not going to work.
It never works out like that. And, you know, it's funny, like I've had, you know,
and you'll never be completely right anyway. So,
right. I had a meeting with like many different levels of my management team. Right. So me being the CEO to my vice presidents, to my directors, to my managers and, you know, whatnot. Right.
Yeah.
We're sitting in a meeting and I made the observation that we're all talking about different timelines. Our focuses are on different things. And I wanted to call it out to them. I said, guys, you guys have to understand that we're all talking about different timelines because that's our focus, right? My focus is 1 to 3 years ahead. My VP's focuses are what's happening in the next 12 months. Right. My director's focuses are what's happening in the next 3 to 6 months or 2 months. And my managers are focused on what's getting done today. Right. You know, and I'm like, we need to understand that we need to focus on today, but we also need to focus on tomorrow and next year. So we're going to have these broader conversations. And it was just really interesting because the managers couldn't understand why we weren't talking about today.
Right.
Well, it's because we're also have to talk about the future. And we were, you know, my VPs were saying, well, you know, look, I understand. Yeah, you have to do those things today, but we need to talk about what's coming down the pike. And to your point, right, it's really interesting how different phases of the business are focused on different things.
Yeah. And you got to recognize it. Look, the managers aren't going to have another today if tomorrow doesn't come.
Right. So it's, you know, strategic, it's important to plan out.
Yeah,
it's important to plan out. It's important to execute. That's why I'm saying, you know, the entrepreneurs that are going into this business right now, you know, you've really got to have a really broad perspective and a really broad ability to bounce around. Some, like I have ADHD. It's perfect for being an entrepreneur.
Right. Perfect.
Like I can't not
sit still.
Bounce, you know, right. I can't sit still and I'm always, you know, my mind's always doing 100 things so I can handle it. But for people that like to really stay on one thing and they need to focus completely on one thing and that's all they can do, they're going to have a really hard time in this business unless they bring on resources or partners or help.
Yeah. Well, that's when the people is not just you. I mean, you have to recognize what your shortcomings are, what your strengths are, weaknesses, you know, and find people that can support you.
Yeah. And you can't afford employees, partners, you know,
right.
It's, you know, some people will say, oh, I don't want partners. I want the whole thing. And I'm like, would you rather split a pot of gold or would you rather, you know, have nothing to yourself? Like,
yeah, you got right. 100% of nothing. Big deal. Right.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Oliver, I thank you so much. What's a way that people can, you know, connect with you, interact with you, see what's going on in your world.
Yeah. So you can check out our latest initiative, which is trustedsearchmarketing.com. That's trustedsearchmarketing.com.
And we'll put these in the show notes to the link.
Please. Yeah. If you could put a link to the website, it'd be great. Check us out. If you guys, any of your entrepreneurs are looking for some internet marketing help, feel free to check us out. Also feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. It's just Oliver Feakins, F-E-A-K-I-N-S.
I'm sure you're the only Oliver Feakins.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Unless you find another British guy living in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And if I can help with any of your listeners, you know, I take questions all the time. People always email me. I've sat down with people. So throwing it out there, if you ask a question, I can help you. I'm more than happy to.
All right, Oliver, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.